They held a press conference last Thursday, and we're going to be playing about 20, 25 minutes of that. And then afterwards, we're going to talk a little bit to Les Kember, who's going to be in the studio bringing you an update about what's happened since that press conference. There's been some interesting developments. Also, we're going to be talking to Art Dyson, who's a local architect in Fresno, and he's going to be talking to us about his vision of an eco-village for the homeless. Actually, it's eco-villages. These would be spread out throughout the community, a unique and creative way to address homelessness and end homelessness in Fresno if this is implemented. And we'll be talking to him in the second half of the hour. Right now, I have Stan Santos on the line, and he's going to tell us about an event that's about to take place in Fresno about immigrant rights. Stan, are you there?
Yes.
Stan, tell our audience about the event that's going to take place at Fresno City Hall starting at 6.
Well, basically, we're having a vigil in front of Fresno City Hall, and the folks that are sponsoring it is the Comité, the May Day Committee for Immigration Reform, which is a coalition of organizations. And they'll be gathering right now shortly before 6. We're going to have a speaker system. We're going to have some speakers, and we're going to have a number of people that are going to be discussing the issue of immigration reform.
And this is because of the Arizona law that was passed? Is that sort of the motivating factor of this, or is there something else that's going on?
No, that would be probably the single biggest incident or biggest, catalyst for folks coming together and being concerned. We've had some meetings with some city officials, and we've discussed the position of the city of Fresno. We've had ongoing discussions with Chief Jerry Dyer to also get his kind of his disposition on other issues, and we would hope that sometime in the future we could also have dialogue with our law enforcement and discuss this with them. Based on what we're learning from Arizona, this measure, you know, it's almost like they're not only creating deep divisions in the community, but they are almost putting a gun at the head of their city budget, in a sense, you could say that, because cities, municipalities, anybody that's got to enforce that law will have great difficulties in meeting the capacity needs for basic security services or safety services. And so I'm sure that our local law enforcement will also have something to say about that.
So if our listeners are interested in attending this vigil for immigrant rights, when and where is it again?
Beginning at 6 o'clock, we'll be gathering in front of City Hall, and so it won't be hard to locate us. We've gotten quite a bit of interest from folks across the community, not just in the immigrant community, and we really appreciate that, the people reaching out to us from just basically middle-class folks who maybe immigration is not their personal issue or concern, but who are supporting us in solidarity, and will also be out there with us.
Great. Okay, that's at Fresno and P Street in downtown Fresno, starting at 6 o'clock in an hour, an immigrant rights vigil. And how late will that be going, Stan?
You know, I don't know, because it depends on how many folks show up and what the disposition of the crowd is. We had originally thought of an overnight vigil. Whether that's the way we're going to go or not depends. You know, this is meant to coincide with the other events that are happening across the nation, some of which are taking place today and some are taking place tomorrow. There's going to be a major event tomorrow in Arizona also.
Okay, great, Stan. We're going to have to run. Thank you for calling in and giving us an update on that important action.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, we are going to listen to the press conference that the Citizens for Civility and Accountability in Media held last Thursday. We're going to listen to it in its entirety, which is, it's kind of interesting because there was no mainstream media covering it. The Bee wasn't there. The main television stations weren't there. Channel 21 did come. Channel 49 was there. KFCF was there. But by and large, the corporate media did not cover this event. And that's why I think it's important for us here at KFCF to bring you the press conference as it rolled out. And there was about 50 to 60 people, community activists, at this press conference. It was well attended, except for the media. So here we go with the press conference. Speaking first will be Les Kimber, who's the spokesperson for this group.
Yes. Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
First of all, let me thank all of you for coming out this morning, for attending this press conference, giving us an opportunity to shed light on what we consider a major problem in our community, a lack of civility and accountability in media. For those of you here from the press, we have prepared a press package for you. And that package includes over 8 months of work that this committee has done in terms of dealing with this problem. It includes letters of support from other organizations. It includes correspondence between this committee and KMJ Radio, and all the background information that will give you some semblance of how much work we put into this. First of all, I'm going to introduce the committee, and then once I introduce the committee, I will ask you to hold all of your questions and so forth until after the committee had made their statements, along with a couple of other officials. Dr. Gene Kennedy, professor and radio host, is present with us. Raise your hand, Gene. Ellie Bluestein, a member of WILPF, one of the oldest organizations in the country, has done good work for us. Dr. Sue Kapoor, who is professor emeritus of Cal State University. Vicki Fouts, who is part of Uprooting Racism Project. Richard Stone, who is Fresno Center for Nonviolence. And Vanessa Gaona, El Concilio de Fresno. They will be making statements after I finish. I'm also a member of the committee. And again, welcome. KMJ Radio is the number one radio station in Fresno and the entire valley. The station has some 80,000 listeners out of the 1 million plus residents that reside in the broadcast area. KMJ programming is dominated by talk show hosts that are exclusively biased in favor of conservative, anti-government, and anti-President Barack Obama point of view, which in no way reflects the vast diversity represented in KMJ Radio's broadcast area. The 90-plus hours primetime weekly program from 9 a.m. until 11 at night creates an atmosphere of divisiveness that allows for the real possibility of violence toward elected officials, including the President of the United States. Every year throughout this country, we celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. We are reminded of the circumstances surrounding Dr. King's life, not unlike today, where he was demonized by his opponents to the extent that his assassin, James Earl Ray, felt that he was doing this country a favor by killing Dr. King. We are in no way questioning the free speech rights of the various talk show hosts, that dominate KMJ's daily program. We are questioning, however, the fact that KMJ provides the infrastructure for a program that exclusively promotes one point of view. Because KMJ is such a powerful voice that covers a tremendous area of Central California, the programming that it provides has a heavy impact on the image of Fresno that helps to portray this area as far right-wing, quote, redneck country. The truth of the matter is that Fresno and KMJ's broadcast area is probably one of the most diverse areas in the state of California. And we believe that KMJ has a civic and moral obligation to reflect in its daily program the truth of that diversity. KMJ Radio is known throughout the state as the exclusive home of the Cal State University Bulldogs, a public institution that proclaims diversity as a major part of its mission statement. We believe that it is a major contradiction for KMJ on the one hand to be the exclusive home of the Bulldogs, and on the other hand, be the exclusive home of Bias Daily Program that offers no diversity. We're asking residents of KMJ's broadcast area to join with us in our attempt to promote civility and accountability in KMJ's daily program. Now I will ask Dr. Sue Kapoor to come and make his statement.
Thank you very much, Les, for laying the groundwork for us. I want to join him in sharing the concerns of many of us in Fresno and in the Valley. I have been professor at Fresno State for 40 years or so and have worked with many civic organizations. Fresno is now my beloved community, and I want to see peace and harmony here. I have prepared a brief statement that I would like to read. Otherwise, professors have a tendency to go all over. For the last more than 40 years, I have been a part of various peaceful civic and community efforts to bring better understanding among diverse ethnic, social, cultural, and religious groups, generate positive energy, and create a climate of respect, trust, and tolerance in Fresno and the surrounding areas. My life and views are based on my strong belief that we are inherently peaceful, loving souls and can learn to live in peace and harmony without hurting each other, without prejudice and discrimination, without vilification and alienation, without hate and fears, particularly without the corrupting influence and bigotry that we witness in the media. As a responsible citizen of this nation, and as a concerned member of Fresno community, I am troubled and appalled by the inflammatory tone, the tenor, the texture, as presented by some talk show hosts on KMJ radio station, considered the Valley's prestigious media outlet. In my view, it disturbs our civic and social peace. It contributes to the climate of hate, fear and mistrust, and ultimately to violence, the kind of violence that led to the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in this nation. We do not want to see this kind of negativity and poisonous atmosphere prevalent in our nation, in our community, in our workplace, in our neighborhoods, and in our daily lives. We don't want to see that. We do not want any more of this divisiveness, toxicity, and polarization. We had enough of it, enough of it. In its place, we want civility, accountability, and tranquility, in my view. I therefore appeal to KMJ and its management to look into their policies and programs carefully and compassionately and bring some balance and moderation in tone and content and make appropriate changes as suggested in our press release. Thank you very much for being with us this morning, and thanks for your patience and your valuable presence. Thank you.
You are listening to the Citizens for Civility and Accountability in Media press conference, which was held on Thursday, May 20th in downtown Fresno. There were over 50 community activists in attendance. Speaking next is Venancio Gaona with El Concilio de Fresno.
Good morning, everyone. I want to also thank you, all of you who have come to join us to hear what we have to say. This statement reflects El Concilio de Fresno's membership. The Federal Communication Commission has granted a radio license to KMJ AM to broadcast, and in the spirit of fair play and responsible broadcasting, we expect programming that reflects the constant change of diverse interests of the service area's population on socioeconomics, politics, and education, rather than creating a sense that different beliefs are unacceptable and anti-U.S. values. The KMJ AM radio programming continues to nurture a negative image on issues or leaders who might impact the residents in the station's service area. The United States holds general elections every 4 years to reflect a change as perceived by the country's citizens. KMJ AM should also consider changing its programming format to reflect a variety of socioeconomic, political, and educational perceptions on how to improve the United States. Thank you. And again, thank you for being here with us today.
The next committee member is Anna Bluestein, a longtime member of WILCL, Women's International Day for Peace and Freedom.
Thank you, Wes. Radio stations should be responsible for telling the truth and for being respectful to callers, even those who don't agree with the host's point of view. I have no problem with a radio station expressing a point of view, but I do not believe that a radio host has a right to mislead the public by telling falsehoods and demeaning those who express another point of view. Rush Limbaugh compared Nancy Pelosi to the terrorist group Al-Qaeda, saying she is doing the same thing as Al-Qaeda. She is actively recruiting suicide bombers from the ranks of the Democrat Congress to pass health care. Mark Levin often refers to President Obama and Democrats as lying bastards and vows that we will do whatever is necessary to stop Obama and his crowd from destroying our country. He belittles callers who disagree with him as ignorant dummies. On April 20th, Reverend Jim Franklin attacked WILF, a 100-year-old international women's peace organization, as communists, and accused them, along with Peace Fresno, of promoting terrorism. Ray Appleton viciously verbally attacked a local African-American community leader who called in to comment on an issue in the West Fresno community, calling him a bold-faced liar. When the caller complained about being called a liar, Appleton responded by stating, "I don't give a damn how you feel," and abruptly cut him off the air. Last summer, Ray Appleton stated that Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar should be given a reception with a 45 the next time he visits Fresno. These are inflammatory and dangerous expressions. We hope that KMJ will consider moderating their rhetoric and bring greater accountability to the views which they present as facts to the public.
Thank
The next member will be Vicki Fowler.
Good morning, and thank you for being here. I'm a social justice activist, Madera County Chair of the Peace and Freedom Party, and Director of the Uprooting Racism Project. Talk radio has been a concern of mine for some time, but since the election of President Obama and the start of the Tea Party movement, my concerns have greatly escalated. Today, talk radio and some cable news seems full of fear-mongering, half-truths, hate, prejudice, and bigotry. My greatest fear is that this talk will motivate people who hear this all the time to commit hate crimes and violence. I worry about the safety of my president. Even though only 12 at the time of President Kennedy's assassination, I can clearly remember the picture of young John John Kennedy standing with his mother and sister on the Capitol steps and saluting as his father's coffin passed by. I do not wish that experience to be repeated for Malia, Sasha, and First Lady Michelle Obama. My other fear is the possibility of violence breaking out all over our country. For example, what if a police officer was to shoot a person of color somewhere, or a white police officer was shot by a person of color? Will people take to the street and bring about even more violence, hate, and possible death? One has to wonder what could happen when you see people bringing guns to President Obama's appearances and to Tea Party gatherings, and others telling people to buy guns and ammunition in order to take back their country. I feel I must take a stand against all this chaos and hate. As Gandhi said, we must be the change we wish to see. If I stand by and do nothing, and violence was to break out, I would only have myself to blame for not trying to do something about it. By doing something now, I know I'm giving it my best try. In closing, I would like to quote Martin Luther King. Like an unchecked cancer, hate corrodes the personality and eats away its vital unity. Hate destroys a man's sense of values and his objectivity. It causes him to describe the beautiful as ugly and the ugly as beautiful, and to confuse the true with the false and the false with the true. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicki. Our next presenter will be Dr. Gene Kennedy.
I want to thank everyone for being here today and to hear what we have to say. I want to talk about my concerns are about KMJ's primetime programming. Balancing programming is not too much to request from a radio station that claims to cover a wide listening audience. KMJ advertises for many socially conscious organizations, such as the Provarella House, whose mission statement would disagree with the type of one-sided programming that is allowed to take place. The People's Church, Reverend G.L. Johnson, who also features a sermon about God's love and compassion on KMJ each Sunday morning, is followed by the insensitivity and disrespectful commentaries that Rush Limbaugh puts out on KMJ. I find myself asking the question, Does the attack put out by KMJ radio host complement those organizations I mentioned? I find myself asking the same question when I review the City of Fresno's and Fresno City College's core value tenets, both of whom advertise on KMJ. And again, I find myself questioning, how does KMJ truly reflect those organizational core values statements? When these radio hosts promote all this passionate hostility over the airways, I personally don't believe the hostile attack of the radio host Sean Mark Levin or Glenn Beck, along with our local radio host Inger Bark, Ray Appleton, and the Reverend Jim Franklin, mirrors these organizations' core value. Then when I listen to Reverend Jim Franklin, who each Sunday preaches to his congregation and attempts to mirror what Jesus would do, and I've visited his church, then Then he gets on the radio show on the KMJ and attacks peace organizations' reputation and encourages his listening audience to not financially support Fresno State University, which is a proud home of the Bulldogs. That seems unreasonable and personal to me, and I wonder why a radio station who claims to have an upstanding reputation and strong, dedicated audience would allow such rampant and raging to take place amongst their radio hosts. Then Fresno Pacific University, another organization who has a strong mission statement and complementary core values, who are also advertising their international MBA program, their enrollment information. Yet again, when I hear how KMJ radio hosts unleashes hours of primetime insensitivity towards those who would dare to call in and disagree with their points of view, it makes me inquire how Fresno Pacific University could advertise on KMJ. The manner in which KMJ radio hosts suggest doing away with the governance of our country day in and day out seems unresting. In fact, KMJ radio hosts are known for spewing out unreasonable rhetoric, and I believe personally that KMJ's current style of programming creates a hostile environment and paranoia. In fact, many of KMJ radio hosts misleads in order to create fear. It is not unusual to hear KMJ's radio hosts say that they are afraid. This constant classical conditioning over a 90-hour programming cannot be healthy to this country. It becomes a breeding ground for a country's revolt. We are therefore appealing once again to KMJ management and stakeholders to please create a more balancing programming that will balance out emotions of your listening audience, unless it is the intention of KMJ's attempt to start a bloody revolution by using the voices of their radio host to incite the listening audience to action. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Kennedy. And now the final member of the committee, Richard Stone.
Good morning. I am with the Fresno Center for Nonviolence, and my comments are really here to emphasize that this is not a free speech issue. We are not challenging the right of the commentators to say what they want to say or the right of KMJ to air those. What we are talking about is the overall effect of their programming. KMJ's primetime programming cannot be evaluated by taking its shows one at a time. All of their primetime commentators have a unified perspective, cumulatively teaching listeners that only one view of current events is to be tolerated, and anyone who opposes that view is not worthy of respect or attention. The perspective put forward 90-plus hours each week ridicules the notion of concern for others and government for the people. The impact of creating such an echo chamber is well known, and the power of repetition was famously articulated by Joseph Goebbels, Hitler's PR master. As a licensee of public airspace, KMJ has a responsibility to serve the public welfare by not structuring its programs in a way that fuels extreme disrespect and intolerance. In allowing little or no room for reasoned disagreement, while demeaning those who offer dissent, KMJ's chosen lineup of commentators has created a profoundly undemocratic and potentially dangerous presence in our community. In their letter responding to the statement of concern that we sent them last November, KMJ claims to be dispensing only entertainment. Fundraising on air for Tea Party events is not entertainment. Influencing people to picket in protest of speakers they otherwise know nothing about is more than providing entertainment. When the content of their programming so clearly enters the realm of provoking social action, KMJ needs to take responsibility for the results of the political advocacy advanced on their station. KMJ calls itself the most powerful media presence in the valley. We call on them to take that position seriously and provide programming that does not do damage to the social fabric of the region they serve. Thank you.
And we've been listening to the press conference that was held last Thursday by the Citizens for Civility and Accountability in Media. We're honored to have Les Kimber, the spokesperson of that group, in the studio today. Welcome, Les.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Can you bring us up to date? What's happened since the press conference?
Well, a lot of good things have happened since the press conference. First of all, the hate calls and the reaction that we have gotten from reports that were made on KMJ and Rush Limbaugh's show proves our point that the overwhelming amount of hate speech that comes out on KMJ radio can provide the atmosphere for violence. You know, we talk about the historical fact of that, the fact that Dr. Martin Luther King was demonized so much when he was leading the civil rights movement, that James Earl Ray thought that he would be doing the country a favor by blowing away Dr. King. That kind of atmosphere and so forth is being created by folks like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and other hosts on KMJ Radio. We have been able to get support from a lot of good people, good thinking people in this area that feel as we feel, that KMJ has a corporate responsibility to make sure that they do not participate in this kind of rhetoric and so forth. Truth of the matter is, KMJ has held itself out as their success as a model business thing, private sector capitalism. But what they don't tell you is that a good percentage of their income and so forth comes through their association with a public institution, an institution like Cal State University, who has as a part of its mission statement diversity. Yet they are identified with a station that doesn't believe in diversity. In fact, brags on the fact that they cater to only one point of view. We're asking people to join us in our efforts. By writing letters to the Fresno Bee, to KMJ Radio, to Cal State University, and other areas that can be effective in meeting our goals and so forth. We have no intention of boycotting KMJ. We have no intention of putting these folks off the air. All we are asking is some semblance of balance in their reporting. You know, it's amazing that we are being crucified, if you will, from telephone calls and emails and so forth for exercising our First Amendment right to criticize stuff that we see wrong. These people accuse us of taking away their First Amendment right as though we have no the same opportunities under the First Amendment right.
Les, let me ask you this. We just have a few more minutes or a few more moments. How can listeners become involved or get in touch with you if they are interested in the petition or getting more information? Where do they go for that?
Well, we have a website with our telephone numbers and information on it and so forth. The phone number is 265-6414, I believe, but they can verify that from our petitions and so forth. They can also help circulate petitions. They can write letters to the Fresno Bee again and to KMJ. There's many ways they can help, and I believe we're going to get that help.
Thank you, Les. We need to leave it there. We have been talking to Les Kimber, and he is the spokesperson for Citizens for Civility and Accountability in the Media. And they do have a press, a website. You can Google that and find out more information there. Right now, we're going to shift gears, and we're going to listen to an interview I did yesterday with Art Dyson, who's a local architect in Fresno. He's going to be talking about eco-villages. I'm here with Art Dyson. Art is a Fresno architect, and he was on the City of Fresno's commission to look into homelessness and develop a 10-year plan to end homelessness. Art's developed a concept about eco-villages, which will house the homeless. And he set up a pilot project at Fresno State where the students have just recently built a few models. Art, let's start with your sharing with our listeners a little bit about your philosophy behind your architectural techniques.
Thanks, Mike. I'd be glad to. You said we've got 25 minutes. This will probably take 2 or 3 days, but let me see if I can capsulize this. I have my undergraduate work is in philosophy and psychology, so I see architecture, I think, differently than most architects. When one thinks of architecture, generally one thinks about buildings and walls, and architecture is generally defined as the art and science of designing and constructing buildings. But for me, architecture was never about buildings. It was about the individuals that would occupy them. It's not about building walls, but about removing walls or eliminating walls, both socially and metaphorically. So it's more about the exploration of human desires and attachments and of locating the strings that would lead back to one's heart. It's about joy and uplifting the human spirit. It's the discovery of similes and metaphors of life that fascinate me and I believe give meaning to architecture. It is this potential of improving the human condition that motivates me. Humans are fascinating and complicated beings, and it's my solemn belief that architecture can substantially and meaningfully improve the condition and uplift their spirits. So in a nutshell, that's what architecture is for me. I think that if you want to see a little bit more, you can always Google Arthur Dyson or Arthur Dyson Architect or hit arthurdyson.com and see a few more comments.
So given that, how did you end up on the City of Fresno's panel in homelessness, and what was your experience like on that panel?
That was a committee that was formed by the City of Fresno and had a number of folks on it, and I was appointed by Councilwoman Cynthia Sterling, and she knew of my background working on homeless alternatives, alternative housing methods, and so she's the one that appointed me on that, and I headed the building environmental part of the task force.
For our listeners who aren't familiar with the outcome of that task force, what was the outcome? What did the group come up with, and how is that playing out today?
Well, it was interesting because it was defined as a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. So it's that adjective chronic that played a big role in here. So essentially what they did was identify 5 to 10% of the homeless population as those that they were going to try to address. Well, that leaves a huge amount, 90 to 95% of homeless folks that aren't under that umbrella. So it's those folks that we're looking at trying to help. So I think out of this, something is better than nothing, and I think what they're doing is helping some folks. There are a lot of different agencies out there. There are a lot of individuals. There are a lot of corporations out there that are doing good work to help the homeless. But still, there's probably 20,000 homeless folks that aren't being addressed. And so we're trying to fill that gap. We're trying to bridge between what exists and what could exist. So that's what kicked off the Eco Village concept.
Well, good. Well, let's talk about that eco-village concept and tell us your vision about eco-villages. What are eco-villages and what would that look like in Fresno?
It's really a whole different look at what exists. And so what you have to do is look at what brought folks to that situation that they're in. What's going to help them out? Who are we going to help? We know that maybe of the 20 to 25,000 folks, there are 6 to 7 to 8,000 unaccompanied homeless children on the streets. Statistics tell us that 1 in 5 homeless girls are pregnant. I mean, that's a huge amount. And there's no one single agency that can help all of those. And we live in a fascinating world, a world of communication where we know what happens at any moment, any place on earth with communications that we have. And so we have to digest this information as human beings very fast. And for instance, if I ask you what a tree is, you're going to tell me it has a brown trunk and a round green top. Well, when you study it, we know that that's not entirely true, that they're different shapes, that the greens actually come out to be blues and ochres and siennas and a whole range of colors. So we do that with folks too. We do that with the homeless community. I've heard homeless folks described as nothing but alcoholics and drug addicts. And admittedly, there are alcoholics and drug addicts, just like there are in the legal profession or the medical profession or the architectural profession. And admittedly, there are probably a higher percentage in the homeless arena. But also, at the same time, you have children, you have families, you have folks that were contributing members of our community last month that are now unemployed. Either the business owner went bankrupt, they went out of business, for whatever reason. So you have a changing demographic right now. And so what we want to try to do with the Eco Villages, and the Eco Village was a program that is a university program that's cross-disciplinary. And so it was a three-part program that we're looking at. And the first part, the first semester, would be using the colleges of sociology, psychology, urban anthropology, economics, and biology to help make an informed decision on the demographics, on the different conditions that brought folks there, the conditions that would help folks back into a meaningful life and to find their life and their desires that they have. The second part of that would be designing the village itself, and the third part would actually be to construct the village. So it's a 2 or 3 semester program that we're going to do. We're looking at doing it with University of Pacific and Fresno State University. But it's a holistic look at the conditions. So you look at some of the conditions that exist, and you look at some of the opposition that you have to doing anything for homeless folks. A lot of the community don't want to see homeless folks. They don't want to see encampments. And so one of the things we were looking at is the encampments themselves in replacing an encampment. So take a group of folks that already have learned how to live together, in effect have developed a charter of their own on how to run an encampment, and take those folks and put them in a holistic setting that would address many issues. It would be self-sustaining. It would be using recycled materials. It would be a setting in as beautiful type of an environment as possible. So that when folks drove by, it would look like a park-like setting. It would be off the grid. We'd use rainwater harvesting, photovoltaic cells for electricity, geothermal heating and cooling to condition these spaces. We would use all of these different technologies that we have, old technologies, new technologies, solar chimneys, solar attics, wind cooling towers. They would grow their own food. They would have a common restroom, laundry room. And then a huge part of this in each one of these villages would be the economic driver. And that would be a building that would possibly be made out of straw bale, possibly be made out of used tires. And that component would be a venue for the folks that live in that community. So if you have a series of artists, you might have potter's wheels and people might do pottery work. They might teach pottery classes to folks, and then they'd have a venue to sell their pottery in there. If they could say they have woodworking skills, they might take discarded furniture and recycle it, refinish it, reupholster it, and put it back on the market and sell it there. They might teach other folks how to do upholstery, how to refinish wood. Might have an area where people know how to cook and use herbs and dry herbs and produce herbs, and they'll teach other folks. So it's and then after somebody is in here, and this is not intended as a permanent home, it's intended as a way to get folks back into the job market. They'd have a legal environment. They'd have the legal right to live there. They'd have a safe environment to live in, and they'd have an opportunity to develop the talents that they have and develop a job employment resume that they could hand over to other folks.
I want to remind our listeners, we're listening to local architect Art Dyson talk about his concept of eco-villages, which he is currently in the process of setting up a model community. Art, I've heard you talk about eco-villages before and comparing them to what exists and the harsh realities and the loud sounds that homeless people endure as a part of their life right now. Tell us a little bit about how a person's environment and where they live affects them as human beings.
Good question. There's a study of neurosciences that has come to the forefront in the last few years, and it has substantiated information that we have known anecdotally over the years. We know that when you're in a natural environment, the human condition improves. Studies now have verified that. It has shown us that in a hospital setting, for instance, if one has a window and looks out on a natural landscape, they use less medication. They recover faster. Their spirits are higher. Everything is elevated in that situation. We know from studies that when you have the look of a natural environment, as opposed to what most homeless folks are in right now, next to a railroad track, in a paved area, in a very hardscape, without any of the songs of nature that have soothed human beings for eons, without that, aggression and violence increases. But with a natural landscape, with the songs of nature, and by the songs of nature I mean the wind and the trees and the birds singing and all of those things, aggression and violence decreases. So everything that we do is affected by the environment that we're in. So it is either a draining environment or it's an uplifting environment. That's what excites me, trying to put folks in an uplifting environment. And so my, as an architect, where my heart is in trying to uplift the human spirit. So I'm trying to do more than just provide shelter from the elements, but to embrace the elements and provide a shelter for the human spirit, something that will uplift the soul of a human being. So that's where my interest is.
And where are we with this right now? I know the eco-villages, these new constructions that there have been students at Fresno State that have been working on them. This has been in the news. The Fresno Bee ran a story about it a couple weeks ago. And there was a class of students who actually built some of these model eco-villages, and they were on display. They are on display out at Fresno State right now. Tell us where we're at with this project and, you know, when we might see the first model in the community. And tell us some of the challenges that you're experiencing in getting this going.
The class that we just finished at Fresno State had 60 students in it, 61 actually. And it's interesting because it was the first time the two colleges collaborated on the campus. So what we did was bring together design students and engineering students. Well, there's often a disconnect between academia and practicing professional community. And so construction students often don't know anything about design. They're not exposed to it. Design students don't know anything about construction. So we put teams of design students from the School of Arts and Humanities together with construction management students from the School of Engineering. And so the first time they learn to work together. And so what they're doing is developing prototypes. So they actually have four structures on campus as prototypes. Three of them are living units. The fourth one is a sanitary unit. So it's a toilet room with a shower. And so when you see homelessness is an interesting thing because, Mike, you and I can be homeless tomorrow. I mean, if an earthquake hit here and it hit hard enough, we could all be homeless. And so it could affect any of us at any given moment. We see this around the world. We see this with typhoons, with hurricanes, with tornadoes, earthquakes, all of these things. And the number one thing that they really suffer from most, other than lack of food and water, is sanitary facilities. That's probably the number one thing and one of the hardest things. And that's one of the most difficult things for homeless folks to deal with, too. So with solar water heating and a lot of the things that we know, well, we can provide something if we have some prototype shelters that we could put up almost overnight. And so our idea is to try to develop a prototype that could be applicable almost any place. And the other thing that's really exciting to me is that this could be a model for the world, but we're doing it in Fresno first. So we're helping our neighbors first. Now, when I say we, the Eco Village and the class was both instructed and informed by members of the homeless community. So these structures that the students built were being built alongside of the homeless community. When we build the Eco Village, they will be built by members of the homeless community.
And when these Eco Villages are set up, are we looking at putting them all in one place, like in the old industrial section south of downtown Fresno, or will they be like at the fairgrounds? Will there be hundreds of people living in close proximity, or is the idea to have these spread out around the community?
Well, that's another excellent question. And you know, that's a difficult dilemma. What you don't want to do is build concentration camps. And so the reason that we wanted to involve the schools of anthropology, sociology, and sociology is to determine how many folks you can comfortably put together. When you're throwing folks together, you know, it's hard enough when you get a whole family together in a family reunion. When you get unrelated people together, you know, you don't want to create a situation that's worse than what exists right now. So we need to look at those things. Those things will help inform where we go from now. But what we're looking at right now is initially, and so we're looking at trying to work with small groups. So we're looking at the first Eco Village has anywhere from 12 to 18 folks in it because we're taking an existing encampment where folks already have learned to live together. They have a certain code. They don't allow drugs in the area. They have, you know, certain things that they want to live by, and they don't want others to come in and disrupt that organization. So on the location, we would think that we would want to take the existing encampments and build something that's legal and beautiful in that same area, not on the same site, but within the same proximity. Neighbors know that they're already there, so you're not bringing new people in. You're going to improve what exists. The folks that live there know the transportation systems. They know a little bit about it. So that's the first step, but these are small steps. They're baby steps, but it is a step.
You know, one of the problems that has come up time and again in establishing semi-permanent homeless encampments or campgrounds where homeless people can live safely and have some facilities has been NIMBYism, not in my backyard thinking. And I know that happened in an area south of downtown Fresno where the city bought a lot and they were going to put an encampment or a campground there. The business owners in that area came together and opposed it. There was another proposal up on Van Ness, just south of Belmont, a vacant lot of land that another architect had proposed a homeless apartment, not exactly an eco-village, but something nice and that it would be a concentration of maybe 20 or 30 homeless people. And the neighbors, again, came together to oppose that. What thoughts do you have about what would you say to neighbors about an encampment that might be in their neighborhood?
Well, I'd have the same concern. I wouldn't want it. I wouldn't want one of the encampments across the street from me. And that's why we're looking at alternatives. We want to show what can be done. We want to show how beautiful an area can be. We want to show how vibrant these people can. We want to be a catalyst for change, but change in a positive way. We want to show a new direction. And, of course, we see this all the time. Einstein said, talked about not being able to solve the same problems using the same kind of thinking that created them. We don't want to do that. We want to look for new alternatives. And so we want to create something that everybody would be existing encampments for others to see as a model and as an example of what can be done. Then I think it'd be much more palatable to folks.
Great. Art, I'm afraid we're running out of time here. Can you talk a little bit about how listeners can help and become involved in this eco-village concept?
Well, I think everybody has to find their own way, and as somebody said that nobody can do everything, but everyone can do something, and I think that that's the way we need to look at it. I think that, Mike, you've been at the forefront of this for years, and you carry that they can, and everybody can help in some way, one way or another, to contact you directly, maybe through the radio station here.
Thank you for that, Art. I want to remind our listeners, we've been listening to Art Dyson talking about the concept of eco-villages, and this is a new project that's just getting off the ground. Art, do you have any final words?
Maybe I can quote John Wooden, UCLA coach that was grew up in that backyard. He said, don't let what you can't do interfere with what you can do.
Very good. Nice note to end that on. Thank you, Art. Okay, and this is the Street Heat radio show on KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno. My name is Mike Rhodes. I've been hosting the show today. Pam Whalen is out of town. She's the usual host for Street Heat. And that's it for our show today. I'm going to take you back to KPFA and the evening news, which will be up in about 2 minutes. And I'm going to take you out with some Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, one of my favorite songs.
Fresno.
The time is 6 o'clock. We wish the best to Nora Barrows Friedman after her last show today. Stay tuned for the news.
Good evening. It's Friday, May 28th.
To the people of the Gulf Coast, I know that you've weathered your fair share of trials and tragedy. I know there have been times where you've wondered if you're being asked to face them alone. I am here to tell you that you're not alone.
President Barack Obama visits an oil-soaked Louisiana beach promising help as criticism of his administration's handling of the spill grows. BP says it'll be at least Sunday before...